Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
The Strange Thing, Volume 2, Story Number 1. When I was 14, I had a friend who experienced a lot of supernatural experiences. She used to tell me she experienced them both in her dad's house and her mom's house, and once before she moved to the house she previously lives in. When she was 3, she used to see her dead grandfather near the swing set in her backyard. When her mom asked her what she was doing, she replied, "I was playing with Grandpa." Her mom was a bit worried and told her to come inside. Nothing happened for a while after that until she moved into her mom's house, which was an old Civil War hospital. The old Civil War hospital had a lot of strange happenings. One time my friend told me that she saw some of her dead cats, and sometimes dead people. When I asked her about the strange happenings, my friend replied that she had one more story. She told me that every night something would bang the middle of her door at midnight, and then it would go away. She never investigated this, and she wanted me to help. I was a bit scared to spend the night with her, but I said I would go and see her room during the daytime, that is. When we were there, I felt like there was something in the house. I had never seen a ghost or felt a presence before, but now I was sure that something was in her house. I decided to help my friend by figuring out how to stop this knocking at her door at night. I told her to try to talk to the knocking and say, "Hey, is there anyone there?" After she did that, the knocking stopped and the appearances began. Every once in a while, a ghost of a girl about age 7 would show up at my friend's house. Of course, I've never seen a ghost because I was too scared to spend the night at her house when these appearances started. But I do believe my friend because her brother saw them too. And he was not a fibber. He wouldn't lie. So this little girl would go around the staircase in her mom's house at night when my friend was doing homework. When the ghost showed up, we decided she needed a name. My friend told me to think of a name, so I did. I came up with a name, Cecilia, because the ghost was silly and Cecilia was a little lame. So I told my friend the name, and one night she asked the ghost, who started to knock again, if her name was Cecilia, and the ghost said, "No, that's my mom's name. My name is Annie." After that, my friend continued to talk to her about stuff. Much of what she told me, I don't remember now. The one thing they talked about was becoming friends. My friend asked Annie if she wanted to be her friend, and Annie said yes. After about 3 weeks or so, the little ghost told my friend she had to go and thanked her for being her friend. This was a bit creepy because during that time at my house, which was a few houses down, I was always feeling a presence in my basement room at night. I don't know exactly what happened at my house, but all I know is that I knew something was there, and it went away when the ghost in my friend's house left. Maybe it was Annie. I don't know. My friend did experience other supernatural events after the ghost left her mom's house. She experienced a lot of different Indian apparitions at her dad's house near the West Virginia border. Once she was pushed into the water when she went to see the creek near her dad's house. The creepy part is that she was alone. After being pushed, she saw an Indian, a man, across the creek, and she ran. She saw at least 3 other Indian ghosts near her dad's house. I wonder if that had anything to do with her being almost a quarter Indian. I'm not sure. My friend had many stories she shared with me, but some of them sometimes I really didn't want to hear because I would just end up getting scared. Next story. When I was young, I lived in Alaska. My family and I moved into this old house on the side of a hill about a mile out of town. I have 2 sisters and 4 brothers, so you can get an idea of the size of the old house. When we moved in, all the house was empty except for this one room that was upstairs on the 3rd floor. It was the only room up there. It was full of boxes. Nothing seemed to be wrong in the house for about a month. Then one day, me and my 3 brothers decided to go into that room and dig through the boxes. You know how young boys can't stay out of things. Those boxes only had personal things in them, old pictures and stuff of that sort. When we left the room, it was a mess with all the stuff and boxes everywhere. I never thought anything about the room or anything in it again until about a week later. My family had gone into town, but I decided to stay home alone. I was sitting in the room at the foot of the stairs that led up to that room. I was playing some John Denver tapes when I heard a voice. It was the voice of an old woman. She sounded like she was in that room, and she was real mad. I could tell that she was coming down the steps by the sound of her voice. She was saying, "Those goddamn kids, I'll teach them not to get in my stuff." And then she went quiet. I was so afraid, but I looked up real quick to see a cloud-looking figure standing at the foot of the steps. I didn't know what to do, so I acted like I didn't see her and just turned off the tape player, got up, and walked out of the house. But when I got out there, I ran the mile into town. I never said anything to anyone about what happened, but soon after, my dad moved us out of that house. About 20 years later, I took my kids to Alaska to see where I lived when I was young. I had gone to the graveyard down the street from that old house. I found the grave for the husband of the old woman. I noticed that it was fenced off for two graves, but one was empty. I did some research into what happened to the old woman's body and found that before she died, she had befriended some of the town people to take care of her. She got sick, so her friend sent her to a town far away where they had better doctors. When she died, her friends left her body there for the state to take care of while they split with each other all of her land and that old house. The old woman never got to be in the grave next to the man she had loved her whole life, and her unresting soul just walked the halls and rooms in that old house, waiting for someone to put her body where she wanted to be. Next story. In 1980, I was attending Chipola Junior College in Marianna, Florida. I was living in a dorm and I worked at the reception desk every weekend. Oftentimes, I was the only person there for the entire weekend. On this particular weekend, Sunday afternoon rolled around and my roommate and suite mates returned from their homes. The way the rooms were laid out, there were two rooms with a bathroom between them. Together they were considered a suite. I was helping them unload their cars. They always brought back awesome groceries from home and passed through bathroom to put some of my roommates' things in our room. As I walked back through the bathroom, I decided to walk back through my suite mate's room instead of walking into our own dorm hall. I looked to my right. This area is pretty small as it was the entrance exit for the shower. As I looked to my right, I saw a young woman there. She was medium height with long, dark, straight hair. Her hair was parted in the middle and she was wearing a blue and red rugby-style shirt. Her hair and shirt style reminded me of the fashions of the early 70s. Of course, I knew immediately she didn't belong there and quickly looked away and then back. She was gone. I was really excited and ran to find my suite mates and roommate who were standing down the hall. I told them the story of what I had seen. I thought they'd think I was crazy, but they didn't. We decided that the next day we would find the cleaning lady and ask her if there had been a girl who had lived in one of our rooms and had died. Mrs. Ryan, the cleaning lady, had been working in our dorm for a long time, so we knew she would know. The next day we went on to classes and to our other usual activities. In the afternoon, my roommate and I were back in the dorm around 3 p.m. We eagerly sought out Mrs. Ryan. She was in the laundry room working. I asked her if there had ever been a girl who had lived in our room who had died. She said she wasn't sure. I described the girl I had seen, and Mrs. Ryan told me she remembered a young girl fitting that description who had died in a car wreck. Well, a few weeks passed, and I decided I had just imagined the girl. But another weekend came around, and I found I hadn't imagined it at all. It was Saturday night, and I had been out with my cousin and a friend. Our curfew was 2 a.m., but I was home by midnight and safely in bed. About 1 a.m., I heard the water in the sink in the bathroom turn on. My suite mate was supposed to be coming into town for a date with her boyfriend. I assumed when I heard the water that she had come in from her date. The water stayed on for a long time. I got really aggravated at my suite mate, but finally decided to get up and turn the water off. The next morning, I went into my suite mate's room, but she wasn't there. I thought maybe she and her boyfriend had gone out for breakfast. When she came in that evening, I asked her why she had left the water on the night before. She looked at me like I had lost my mind and asked me what I was talking about. I told her. You know, when you came in from your date last night, you turned on the water and left it on. She said, I never even came into town last night. I was at my parents' house all weekend. I decided my dark-haired friend wanted to make sure I knew she was there. I never saw her again or had any more evidence of her existence. But I know she was real. Next story. I was 8 years old when we moved to Colts Neck, New Jersey in 1976. My parents had the house built on about an acre and a half of property. The homes in the area were pretty new, although the town itself dated back to the 1700s. My family is large, so we were all excited to move into the six-bedroom colonial. My two brothers were the oldest, and my parents gave them the two downstairs bedrooms that jutted off the wing of the garage. For the first year, things were normal, until the day my brother Mike began complaining of noises outside his bedroom window. At first, he said it sounded like bushes rustling in the wind and scraping against the siding and glass panes. My mom was skeptical since there were no bushes or shrubs planted in the back of the house. As months went by, the noises continued and increased to a soft thud and then a sliding sound, like a person baling hay against the barn wall. He didn't seem to mind the noises all that much, but when his closet doors would open by themselves, it really freaked him out, and he tried to tell our parents that he thought something was in the house. But of course, they were cynical, since no one else had experienced anything. My tough 17-year-old brother began sleeping with the lights on and his TV on as well. Before long, things started to disappear and reappear in very odd places. Car keys would disappear from the table and turn up in the kitchen cabinets. My brother's watch vanished for 2 weeks before ending up in the garage under a box of Christmas decorations. Even my grandmother's false teeth went missing, never to return. They weren't in her mouth. When my oldest brother Rene left for college, I would stay in his bedroom sometimes. He had a great TV and an even better stereo system. The room was cold very often, and when I slept there, I would have the most vivid dreams. Not scary, but incredibly real. On several occasions, I would wake up freezing to find the blankets piled on the floor at the foot of the bed. Despite that, I really enjoyed that room until my brother's girlfriend came to stay one weekend. We were eating breakfast when she asked my dad if he came into the bedroom the previous night. My dad said he hadn't. My brother Rene grew very quiet when I think back to it. She went on to explain an eerie story. She said she woke when she heard her name being called. It was a man's voice, and when she answered, there was no response. Attributing it to a dream, she drifted back to sleep only to be called again. This time she saw the figure of a man standing over her. She said he was tall and thin, and on further groggy observation noticed he had sharp features and was wearing a floppy brimmed hat and a frockish type coat. She could not see his eyes, but he was illuminated by a faint bluish aura. He stood for a moment and then made his way to the foot of the bed and out of the wall. Thinking it was a dream, she went back to sleep. By this time, my brother was pretty pale, listening to her story. Rene is a pure cynic. For him, it's either black or white. No gray area need apply. He hesitantly told of an identical experience that had happened to him a few weeks before leaving for Glassboro State. He never mentioned it for fear we would all think he was crazy. His girl was pretty mad that he hadn't told her and let her sleep in the room. Night lights became a staple in that back bedroom from then on. Not long after, my mom was in the kitchen. She turned to put something on the counter when she saw the figure of a little girl dressed in period clothing, bonnet and all, staring out our picture window. As soon as she saw her, she vanished. Like I said, Colts Neck is old. Phalanx Road was a main thoroughfare for the original settlers. Archaeologists would do digs in the surrounding areas and find old glass medicine bottles, farming yokes, and remains of old homes that used to be. Back in the woods by the reservoir, there is a grave monument. I was young and can't remember the name or the inscription, but it was very old and very out of place back there in the undeveloped woods. Was it the spirit of a farmer that used to live and farm in the land our house was built on? Was that his daughter? Did they die in the rumored fire at Phalanx and don't know they've gone? I guess we'll never know. We moved out in 1984 and settled into a very unhaunted house in Whippany. I wonder if the people that took our place have had any experiences, and if my mom, who passed in that house in 1983, left her impression there. It certainly opened my eyes to the mysteries that our human form cannot fathom or solve. Next story. I grew up in a small town, more projects than anything else, and we lived in the new homes before moving to a small farming community when my mother divorced my father. We moved in with my mom's new husband in his farmhouse. The house had all the makings of a haunted home. The basement had a dirt floor room, very low ceilings. The only thing we had down there were shelves for when we canned. I rarely ever went down there. I had a small room upstairs that was previously used as an office, while my parents and my brother's room was upstairs. I always felt uneasy being in that home. Just looking at it gives me the goosebumps to this day. A couple of things happened. My brother's stepfather and I were in the living room one afternoon, and all of a sudden we heard the upstairs toilet flush and the lid slam. My heart was pounding. My stepdad went on to say, "I guess they have to go too." I was not amused. Another incident occurred when I was looking in my closet. It was upstairs because my room didn't have one, and I saw a man with long hair, a flannel shirt, and jeans walk out of the bathroom and into the wall. I think I was so shocked at what I saw, it almost felt like I couldn't control my body. I walked down the stairs and into the kitchen and just stood there, dumbfounded. My stepdad walked in and asked what was wrong, and I said, "I think I just saw a ghost." I explained to him what I saw, and he told me that in the late 70s, a man fell into a wood chipper at a local company who used to live in the house. He was friends with him. He then went on to tell me that he thinks he sees things all the time. I was very happy to move out of the house, and I'm sure you can understand why. Next story. I don't know where to begin with this story. It all started after me and my roommate stopped being friends, and I bought my first house. It was built in 1954 and was abandoned from 1979 until about 1991. I fell in love with the house the moment I saw it. It was small and had such a lovely retro feel to it. I suppose the first thing that I noticed was odd within the first few days was a complete lack of animal life in the yard. I never saw nor heard a single bird or squirrel. It had an eerie silence to the place. In my first week of living there, I remembered that a can of soup had mysteriously made its way from the kitchen cabinet to behind my pillow. I hadn't had any guests in the house, and I could see no reason for me having put it there. After that, about a week later, I was sound asleep. At around 2:30 a.m., my doorbell rang 4 times. Very loud, distinct rings. I got up and went to the front door, but no one was there. Still half asleep, I cursed the kids next door thinking they were playing tricks on me. However, before I went back, I glanced at the doorbell. To my surprise, the buttons were completely missing and the whole mechanism looked broken. I tried to ring the bell, but with no luck. This sent a wave of fear up my spine, and I slept with the light on for 2 nights after. After living in the house for several months, with a few weird happenings here and there, I decided to invite over a lifelong friend of mine. I'll call him Gary. Gary had never expressed any interest in the paranormal, and we had known each other since we were 10. It was just something that didn't interest him. Before going to my new home, Gary and I had gone out to lunch. His personality was normal as well as his color. I noticed almost right away his attitude changed after we were in the house, as well as his color began to look pale. He started getting easily aggravated about little things and started swearing frequently. He was like a whole different person. At about 8:30, Gary just stood up, walked to the guest bedroom, and went to sleep. He didn't even say anything. He just left. I shrugged it off and went to bed myself shortly after. At about 1 a.m., I woke up to the noise of Gary power puking in the bathroom. I got out of bed and went to assist him in the bathroom. When I walked in, he was completely nude and curled into a ball rambling, This place is not right," or something to that effect. I decided to call 911 thinking he was on LSD or something along those lines. The next morning I visited him in the hospital. I asked him what happened. He told me the doctors found no cause of the extreme vomiting or delusions. In fact, the EMTs told him he started coming to reality shortly before arriving to the hospital. Gary also told me from the moment he entered the house, he began to feel very strange and that he kept getting grotesque and disturbing thoughts and images in his head and felt a heavy presence lurking over him. Needless to say, refused to return to the house. The incident deeply disturbed me. I lived in the house for 6 more months, living with unexplained noises and things being moved to weird places before I finally had gotten fed up with whatever was in the house. I sold the house and moved out within a month. To this day, when I drive by the home, I get a sinking feeling in my gut, and I just want to run for my life. Next story. When I was about 25, I became a divorced mother of 2 young girls and took a job at a Coyote in Netcong, New Jersey. It's a bright pink building with a long history. Before Coyote, it was 2 restaurants, Club 21 and Nellie Burke's. When I started working, no one ever mentioned anything to me about the strange things that would happen there. No one told me about the voices and the shadows, and that when your hair stood straight up on your arms when you went downstairs was a common occurrence. I think they were waiting for me to tell them. My very first experience was the knocking on the window. We had closed up for the night, and I was going to meet other employees for an after-work drink. I was the last one out, parked down in the back of the ramp. The kitchen was right above me. I unlocked the car and heard the pounding on the windows. I looked up. The kitchen was pitch black. I felt the hair on the back of my neck prickle, and my hands shook with my keys. 3 more hard raps on the window, and I couldn't bring myself to look up again. I beelined for the bar where we were all meeting at. When I arrived, Brenda, one of the other employees, looked at me and asked if I was okay. Apparently, I was very pale and had a hard time describing what had just happened. When I told her and the others, they just smiled and said, "Coyote ghosts make contact?" Of course, I was intrigued, scared, yet curious. I started talking to Bill, the head bartender. There were many nights he stayed after closing and heard only noises in the beginning. He heard silverware jingling by table 40. He saw shadows moving through the dining area and would investigate, finding no one. Soon after, he told me of the manifestation. He was cleaning up, catching some tea, when he heard the front door click. You can't see the front door from the bar, but when people come in, you can see their shadows on the one entry wall because of the chandelier in the lobby. He walked to the lobby and found not a soul. He walked the dining room once, thinking they went inside, but again it was darkness. He walked back toward the front door only to see the form of a man. He was middle-aged, wearing a white and black striped sweater with a closely cropped beard. He told me that upon seeing the dude, he screamed like a little girl. "Big, burly, biker Billy," screamed. I had to laugh. Sometimes when I work, I hear my name being called. Easy enough in a place where you worked for the last 13 years. But when no one really is calling you, that's when you feel it. Your customers don't want you. Your co-workers don't either. That's a freakout. It's not just me, it's all of us. The voice could be male or female and knows each and all of us because the staff has been there forever. The poor bus kids won't go downstairs alone. My nephew, who I suspect may be gifted on his mom's side, has seen the same shadow I have, casually leaning in a doorway downstairs, observing us getting supplies. He quit. We just didn't help. Unlike tangling with them anyway. We decided to call in researchers. Ironically, before they came, the relatives of the previous owners came in. Lynn was their waitress and told her the craziest story. Downstairs used to be a bar as well as the one upstairs. When her grandpa would close Nellie's, he would call the cops at least twice a month, swearing there were people hiding downstairs. Bar stools could be heard moving around. Bottles would clank. When the old came down, it would stop. TSPR came in a few months later. Activity was low, but the second time they returned, there was lots more. A few entities occupied the building. There's pictures that they took and EVPs, but at the end of the day, we didn't get a name. Unfortunately, the owner died. We all still work there, though, but the place has been quiet. I keep urging the new owners for renovations to see if our friends will contact us. We missed them, but maybe they've moved on. And if that means peace for them, then that's cool with me. Next story. While living in the state of Maine, my two sons and I headed up the road to look in an old apple orchard to shoot a deer. Outside the orchard was an old stone home. Across from it was a fallen down barn. The boys and I walked over to the old barn. There was some snow on the ground, not a whole lot. As we got directly across from the driveway of the house, we could see the trees out back. Behind the trees was a large pond. Something caught my eye in the side window of the house. It was a large woman in an apron, leaning on the table there and smiling at us. I told the boys we should go and ask her if it was all right to cut through her yard to go behind and into the orchard. We walked across the street and knocked on the door, noticing immediately that there was no furniture in the house. I walked around to the side window. There was an old table there in the front of the window, all dusty with no hand marks, where the woman had been leaning. Also, no footprints around the house in the snow. We saw her quite some time before crossing the dirt road. She was there, but not a real person at all. She was a real ghost. We later learned that the house was empty because of this woman who had haunted it for many years. The house has been torn down. No one could ever live in it. It was in Fryeburg, Maine. There was a very, very haunted house near Bridgeton, Maine, about 8 miles from this one. The owner offered $100 to anyone who could spend the night in it. No one ever did while I lived up there. Strange but true. Next story. When I was a child, we lived in a most unusual haunted house. Built on the log cabin style, but larger, more like the Ponderosa, the house was at least 100 years old. The upstairs and downstairs had been converted into separate apartments. We lived downstairs while an elderly lady, Miss O'Kelly, lived upstairs. The house was situated on the outskirts of Atlanta on several acres, nestled away from the main roads where traffic flowed. All the electricity, running water, and other modern conveniences had been added. Even as a toddler, I recognized the vestiges of a bygone era. Rusty plows and other farm implements lay idle on an overgrown field. Ashen sheds, barns, and other outbuildings still housed the remnants of harnesses, plows, pitchforks, and other tools for farming, hunting, and trapping. What remained of the flexible, two-handled saws they used were only the half-eaten blades that time had devoured. Broken cast-iron pots and shards of pottery lay half-buried under the earth alongside the large lye vat, which had been used for making soap. A dirt lane meandered around the premises into the woods, where small dilapidated houses stood crumbling. Only one was occupied by a strange man, a bit of a recluse, as was Miss O'Kelly, disappearing into the medley of strange sounds and people that was the backdrop of an already haunted world I had been born into. In my youth, I never understood there were ghosts, not real people like Miss O'Kelly or the man that lived in the woods. Let me explain. It was not a case where only one specially sensitive individual or clairaudient could hear the sounds. Everyone heard them. Our ghosts were toilers that worked from sunup to sundown. The matriarch of the family that we dubbed Granny was not that old by today's standards, judging from her labor. She was the first and the last to rise and go to bed, playing out the same drama endlessly that began with the morning wake-up call. Granny ascended the stairs, clapped her hands, and barked at the men, presumably her sons and husband. "Get up! Get up!" Most of what they said sounded like gibberish, and the accent was strange. The thud of feet could be heard hitting the floor, as well as their descent down the stairs. Granny could be heard in the kitchen clacking the dishes and silverware as she prepared the morning meal. The men always exited through the side door in the kitchen to harness the snorting horses with chains to continue plowing the fields. Other sounds emanated from the house. The thumping of Granny churning butter in the kitchen, and later the rhythmic foot-tapping on the floor of what we imagined to be a spinning wheel. Though no one ever saw a visual manifestation, to my knowledge they had very definite roles that were easily recognized. The buckboard wagons creaked as the wheels turned and drowned out with distance, later returning with louder sounds as they approached the house. Throughout the day, the sounds of hammering, sawing, and other work-related noises could be heard. Upon entering a room, the noises would suddenly stop, only to start back up again the minute you left. If you entered their work area outside, the noises would also cease temporarily, only to resume as soon as you left. For that reason, I assumed they were real people that were just around the corner, in another room, outside or on or about the premise working. About this time, my grandmother became seriously ill, and we began spending weekends away from home. Upon returning, Miss O'Kelly said there was a whole gang of them downstairs just jibber-jabbering away. Our household ghost had a company with all the noises associated with a get-together of family and friends. No one could understand them, except for the morning wake-up call of, "Get up! Get up!" That was close enough to "Get up! Get up!" And with the accompanying sounds, there was no mistaking those words. Miss O'Kelly said when we weren't there, they'd carry on all night, as she didn't think she'd ever get any sleep, and was always glad when we came back. I asked my mother what she did when we first moved in and discovered the place was haunted, to which she calmly replied, "Oh, we knew it was haunted when we moved in. The Wilsons had lived there before us, and they told us about it, but they said the ghosts wouldn't hurt you." Her only complaint had been that she thought she'd never get any sleep amidst the incessant noise that would often go on all night. Other strange events she recalled, one that I vaguely recalled, were the lanterns that floated through the woods at night at about the same level they would be if a human held them. She didn't know what to make of the events at the time, but in later years my family and I had many discussions regarding the ghostly manifestations. My mother and I decided to go and research the haunted scape after some 40 years. As we were driving there, I asked her if she thought they were still there, to which she said, "Oh no. You know, as soon as they tore the house down, they all left." Interestingly though, I'd been a child when I last lived there, and as we neared the locale, I felt it, and I exclaimed to my mother, "We're close, I can feel it." She responded, "So can I." Though a mall and newer homes had been constructed at the site, something of the energy remained. We heard nothing, nor did we see anything out of the ordinary. But there at Ground Zero, we could still feel their presence.